work and then you stumble, you fall, you get up, you work, you stumble, you fall. And each time you learn things. And so I've always been a believer that no matter what you do, you can't lose, because even if things don't come out the way you want, then you've learned something that gives you firepower to go to the next step.
Welcome to the My Future Business Show, where we get you in front of your best audience and keep you there. Not only are we interviewing the biggest names in business to help you become even more successful, we're inviting you to book your spot on the show to help you grow your business. So at the end of the call, make sure you fill in the interview application form at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews.
Hi, and welcome back to the My Future Business Show. My name's Rick Nusky, and I tell you what, this evening I have somebody on the line that I have just been blown away with their bio, some of the experiences that this gentleman has had as an author, a producer, a playwright, films, and the list goes on and on, is nothing short of breathtaking. So with that being said, welcome to the show, Teddy Hayes.
Thank you, Rick. I'm glad to be here.
Yes, again, I was saying earlier with Teddy, just how amazed I was about how much you can squeeze into a life. I didn't think that it was possible, that you could just do so much. You have been involved with, you know, this list is long.
Yes.
Before we, I guess, jump into that side of things, Teddy, what I always love to do is start off by learning a little bit, just a little bit, about you, your lifestyle, and the things you like to do when you're relaxing.
Well, I'm a bit eclectic and I'm a bit weird. Right now, for some unknown reason, I'm learning Italian. Because I have this time on my hands, normally I'd be going to the studio, I'd be doing different things. But my wife, she likes trips to Italy. So I said, you know, next time I go to Italy, I'm going to be able to make my way around. And then she said, well, no, we should stay in Italy maybe a month. And I said, well, if I'm in Italy a month, I want to be able to talk to people. So I got this Italian book for dummies, and I've been going through it. and I have a friend from Italy, and she says to me years ago, she says, I can teach you Italian. I said, no, I'm not so interested in learning Italian. But guess what? I'm on the phone with her twice a week now when she's giving me Italian lessons.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful.
That's what I'm doing right now.
That's excellent. Look, we're going through some tumultuous times globally. You know, I suspect that your lifestyle has changed to reflect the current circumstances. What is happening in your life right now, Teddy?
Well, strangely enough, Rick, things have changed. But for me, I work from home. So I've been working from home about 30 years. So a lot hasn't changed. I have a schedule I try to stick to. I get up and I write in the morning. After I write for a bit, then I go give myself a reward and I have my breakfast. After my breakfast, I try to relax an hour or so watching something on television or listening to something. Then I come back and write until the afternoon or do whatever business I'm doing until the afternoon. So that's my schedule. I mean, it's been one I've been doing for many years. So.
And that's a beautiful thing, because you get to set the scene, you get to call the shots, and you've had to work to that point. This just doesn't happen by accident, does it?
No, not at all. You work and then you stumble, you fall, you get up. You work, you stumble, you fall. Mm-hmm. And it's that process. And each time you learn things. And so I've always been a believer that no matter what you do, you can't lose, because even if things don't come out the way you want, then you've learned something that gives you firepower to go to the next step.
Yes, thank you so very much for sharing, Teddy. I before we jump into your writing of your detective series, which I'm looking forward to, one of the things that I try to do for the My Future Business audience is to bring out some truths about being an entrepreneur, being a leader, and finding your true purpose in life. It's clear to me that you have not only found that true purpose of life in life, you're crushing it. Is this something that's always been with you, or did you have to find yourself, as it were, and find your purpose? How did it come about for you?
Well, as a kid, I was passionate about music. So it started with music. I started being involved in music when I was pretty young, 7 or 8. And when I was 15, my grandmother said, I'm going to give you, what do you like for your birthday? I said, I don't know. She said, I'm going to send you to music school so you can learn music properly. I said, I don't want to go to music school because I know. She says, no, she says, if you want to do this, you're going to learn it properly. And I wanted to be a singer. And I did. And I one thing led to another. I got involved in dramatics, amateur dramatics in my hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. And I got to go to university. I didn't know I was going to university, but I got the opportunity to go to university because I was a good student and they gave me a scholarship.
Fantastic.
And in this university, they had a course, communications, and it was a brand new course. It talked about the principles of communication, but they also had something that intrigued me. They had a television studio, and I said, oh boy.
Here we go.
And this is very new. This is back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in the television studio learning things. And since I was in theater, I was very much aware of acting and how things worked with actors and staging and stuff. So when I put those two things together, it kind of fell to me, okay, I can do this. I can kind of bring these elements together. And I was fortunate in that even before I finished university, I got a job in the television studio as an editor and a processor in a film. Mm-hmm. And so by the time I graduated, I graduated with about a year and a half of working experience. So I got a job straight away. And one thing led to another. And strangely enough, I graduated university in 74, but by 1976, I had done so well that I had an opportunity to move to Hollywood. And that's why I was working with Quincy Jones. So
it
was about going forward, taking everything I had learned, putting it in front of me, doing the best I could. And the thing with Quincy Jones came about quite by accident, because there was a small film that I made in my job in Ohio, and they needed someone to be a national spokesperson for this organization. And I met a guy working for Quincy Jones, and I pitched the idea to him, and he said yes, and Quincy Jones agreed to be a fundraising chairman for this community organization, which allowed me to go out and meet Quincy Jones. And then I moved to California still on this project. And Quincy Jones recommended me to a friend who was putting up a little show, and I got the job. And
wow.
It was the best thing that ever happened. And I remember being in the back of the audience. Nobody knew who I was. And I'm just very nervous to see my works on stage for the first time. And I was just overjoyed that people laughed when they were supposed to. They went ooh when they were supposed to go ooh, and I said, oh, I can connect with these people. And that was a great moment, and all because someone like Quincy Jones recommended
me. Well, this is the thing. I'm looking at these names. We've got Quincy Jones, we've got Roberta, we've got filmmakers and producers including Melvin Van Peebles. Does being exposed and hanging out with this caliber of person lift your game?
Absolutely, because you know you can't do it wrong twice. if you do it wrong once,
yeah,
they may say, okay, get it together. Because if you're not on your A game, you'll be replaced very quickly.
Yes.
Because these guys don't want to make mistakes, because they got to where they are by not making mistakes.
Yeah.
And working with Melvin Van Peebles was a great thing for me, because he was a great mentor. And I thought, at first, he was the meanest guy in the world. But then I remembered running track when I was in junior high school. My coach, Mr. Parker, said, listen, boys, he says, you're going to hate me during practice. He says, you're going to really go home and really hate me. He said, but when we win, you're going to love me. And he was right. And we won the All-City Champions ship that year, and everybody loved Mr. Parker. And it was very much the same with Melvin Van Peebles. When I came started working for him after working with Roberta Flack, he says, I'm going to now really teach you how to write and how this business works. And he did. And it was very tough for the first year because sometimes we worked 7 days a week. And it was just grueling, and it was a grind. But after that first year, things started to kind of open up like a flower blooming. And I started to see, okay, so this is how it all fits together. And I became more and more passionate about it.
I look at people's journey through life and I think to myself, in my own situation, Teddy, what is the legacy that I want to leave behind? I just wonder, what would be your biggest, greatest gift to humanity, do you think, through all of this?
Well, I think whatever I touch, I would like to leave better than I found it some way.
Yeah. You have certainly attracted some notoriety. You've also been awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award by the Equal Arts Foundation in the UK. Tell us how that came about.
Quite by surprise, really. I got a call from a guy who does publicity for me, Richard Selwyn Barnett. He says, listen, he says, I'm working with this magazine in Ireland called Equal Magazine by Shelley Rogers is the founder of it. He said, and they want to give you a Lifetime Achievement Award. I says, really? He says, yeah. And so I went up to Belfast and met with Shelley Rogers and Kieran, and we talked about it, and they gave me the award, and it was terrific. I mean, I got interviewed by the BBC, Ulster, and a lot of people came out and supported me, and I made new friends like Pat and Donna Slattery, Pat Slattery, and it was great, yeah.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so very much. This is just wonderful. I know that the My Future Business audience loves taking away the ideas, the insights into people's lives so that they can go ahead and try to, I guess, somewhat emulate and do the good things in their life and be successful. Now, in terms of success for you, you've not only been involved deeply in books, plays and feature films. I'm used to talking with people that may be doing one of those things. You've done not only three of them, but you've done them multiple times. When do you sleep?
Actually, I sleep about 7 or 8 hours a night. I'm notorious. My wife will come in and say, "You sleep again?" I say, "Yeah, I'm sleeping." And I take naps, and I find it refreshes me. And sometimes I get up in the middle of the night and I have to work because I'm the kind of person, if I get a germ of an idea, I have to go do something about it because I feel, yeah, it'll evaporate if I don't write it down. And so it's just that kind of consistency, I think. Mm-hmm. And I do get rest because rest, I think, is very important for the creative process. And I've learned that over the years. Because there was a time in my life when I was younger, I didn't rest very much. And I had, you know, children then and everything growing up.
Yeah.
But I've learned over the years that rest is important. So that's why I have a schedule so that I can build in my rest time, I can build in my work time. And the other thing I've learned over the years that's very important for me is that I don't try to do everything at once.
Mm-hmm.
I know that if I have a project, if it takes a month, 2 months, I'll give it that time and I'll do a little each day moving towards that. So that way, when I do something, it's quality rather than having to think about, oh, well, I'll just do this and it may not work. Well, if I plan it out properly and I do a little each day and that little bit is good, then I know by the end of it, it's going to be a good project.
I know that you already appreciate and use the power of the pen. When you look at the power of the pen when it comes to books versus plays versus creating a feature film, if you have a germination of an idea, how do you know whether or not it's going to be a book, a film, or a play?
That's interesting because I almost see it and feel it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a play, it feels differently than if it's a book. And if it's a musical play versus a dramatic play, it feels differently. And I don't know why it does. It just does. I guess it's the experience of having done it over the years. For example, when I did The Baskerville Beast, which is a musical version of Sherlock Holmes' The Hounds of the Baskerville Story.
Mm-hmm.
I had chicken pox and I couldn't go out for about 2 weeks. So I was stuck in the house. And my nephew, my 7-year-old nephew, gave me these chicken pox. And I'm stuck in the house with these looking horrible. Nobody wants to even look at me, let alone come near me. And I had to go downstairs to get something from the fridge. And on my way back, somebody had the television on, and there was a Sherlock Holmes story, The Hound of the Baskervilles, on television. And there was a scene that I had never thought about before. And I sat down and I watched it. And 10 minutes later, it came to me. This is a great song, if this were a play.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the idea that I would make it into a play, but that was the first song. And I ran upstairs, got my piano out, and wrote the first song. And about 9 days later, I had 13 other songs, and I had a script. So that's the way that worked. But I knew it was a play. I knew it wasn't a movie, but it just felt like a play.
Yeah, not being on this side of that lens, it's very hard to understand the creative process, and it's just wonderful insight. I really do appreciate you sharing. I'm looking at your detective series, and I wonder, when you moved to the UK, you started writing then or before you moved over? What's the timeline there?
I wrote that first detective novel in 1987.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't sell that first detective novel until 1997. And it took me 10 years to sell it because everyone rejected it.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't stop me because I knew or believed I had something. And one of the things that stands out in my memory is that when I did get it published in the UK, it was successful. And I was on a book show. And the woman asked me, she says, how many times were you rejected between 1987 and 1997 when you got this book published? And I had to think about it. I never really thought about it. She says, you didn't. I said, no. I said, because the rejections didn't count. The only thing that counted was when the guy says, yes, we'll publish you. So I never really keep the rejections in my mind because I just say, okay, well, they rejected it. I'm on to the one that's going to say yes. So I think that's part of why I can keep going, because I never take the rejections on. I don't take it personally. I just say, okay, they rejected me, so what? I'm moving on.
There's that perseverance, that tenacity, that never say die attitude, isn't it?
That's right. That's right.
I just love this story. I just love how this can help the audience, because I know they just eat this sort of content up. So thank you again for sharing. Now, you have how many detective books in your series of novels at the moment?
I'm writing number 9 at the moment.
Do they take a long time now as opposed to when you first started writing them? Or is there a storyline in your mind some 12 months in advance? How does that create a process?
Yes, there usually is, Rick. Not that it necessarily makes it onto the page.
Yeah.
But there is a storyline in my mind. For example, number 7 took me a lot longer to write than I thought it would.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out to be people saying, oh, I really like this book. Number 8, I wanted to make sort of different, so I approached it a bit differently. But normally, if I sit down and focus, the book will take from 5 to 9 months to write.
I mean, this is important to know, because I have a very special place in my heart for book authors, and they've certainly got a place on the My Future Business Show, simply because writing a book for a lot of people is hard work. If you're in a creative, flow, has it ever been hard for you?
It is not hard, but only because I have developed technique and craft over the years. When I sit down to write a book, I know basically how to go about it. And I think this is what a lot of people don't do. They look at the finished book and they say, oh, this is a magnanimous task. And it is. But again, going back to, if you take it paragraph by paragraph, and you can do that for 9-10 months, then it's not such a Herculean task. But if you make one paragraph good, the next paragraph good, mm-hmm. and then you have craft and you're building on the craft and you know where you're going, then it doesn't become such a big task. It's manageable. Not that it's easy, but it is manageable. Because like I said, sometimes you'll have a story in mind and you start the story and you say, let me see what can I do with this. And the answer may not come to you straight away, mm-hmm. but if you have the craft, you'll know that you can approach it in a number of different ways. And for me, that's why the rest is important, because if I relax, I'm cutting the grass or taking a walk, oftentimes the idea of how to solve the problem will come to me. But it's important that the rest is there, because the rest relaxes your mind so you're not just focused on the problem with the front of your mind, but your subconscious can work on it as well.
Well, that's some sage advice for anybody who's listening to the show today, is to actually put down the pen, get away, and when you're not thinking about it, the answers will come, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah. Especially if you have the craft, because what the craft does is it gives you options of how to approach something. And I constantly read and make notes, even to this day, in books that I like. If I say, oh, I like the way the author did this, I'll make a note and say, oh, that's interesting. For example, with the Maigret novels, George Simenon, he has a great flow. He has a great way of writing with flow. And I'm always aware of how he flows. I say, oh, that's, and if I'm reading a Maigret novel, I'll write down a great way of flowing from one thing into another. Mm-hmm. So that's all part of the craft that you build up over the years.
And you tailor it to reflect your specific taste and technique, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I'm looking at this and I think to myself, when you write, do you just get it out and you just flow for a couple of hours? And when is the best time for you, do you find, to write?
I'm a morning person, mm-hmm. Rick, so I think, for me, the morning is works. And what I tend to do is, before I start my book, I've outlined most of it, so I know where it's going to go, how it's going to develop. And so as I start to write, I'm writing really within a structure that I've created before. Yeah. And so I know it's kind of like a roadmap, so I know where I'm going. I know what the characters are like. Because I've worked with these characters for about 25, 30 years, mm-hmm. I have biographies on each of the characters. I created biographies on each of the characters. You know what the characters' histories are, what they like, what they don't like. So as you develop the stories, you can still be true to the characters and keep them coming in and out and make it interesting for the reader.
Teddy, I wonder, I just had a question pop to mind. A lot of people worry about the fact that they don't have any formal training in writing. Should that stop somebody if they have a story to tell?
No, I don't think so. I think now it's pretty easy to get training. Mm-hmm. Just go on the internet, get books, read. I think the best way to learn to write is to read other writers. The more you read, the more you'll absorb what people are doing. And then the more you absorb, the more you can start to break it down and say, this person is doing this. For example, with me, because I started writing scripts mm-hmm. in New York with Melvin Van Peebles, my style is, for novels, is still very cinematic. And when I write a novel, I still think in scenes. So if I'm writing a novel, even though it's in the form of a novel, in my head, I'm still thinking I'm going from scene to scene to scene to scene.
Yes.
Like, yeah. I'm writing a film. So that's what makes my style work for me, because I'm doing what works for me. I write in scenes. I see the scene. I see the guy across the room. And similarly, when I'm writing a play, I have to think, okay, this guy will say this or this woman will say this, and then they'll exit. Stage left, stage right. So It's all part of the same thing for me, but because I've done it for a long time,
you know it.
I can kind of flow from one to the other very easily.
Thank you for sharing that. I know that people that are listening to this who are aspiring book authors and playwrights and the likes are taking a great deal of value from this call. Now, in terms of the detective series itself, now that we've talked about, I guess, the mechanics of actually writing or creating content, let's talk a little bit about the actual detective series and the characters in that series.
Well, the main character is Devil Barnett, who's an ex-CIA assassin,
mm-hmm.
who got fed up with the way he was being treated within the CIA
mm-hmm.
because of racism, because of how they saw people who did his job. And he wanted to move out of being a hitman into something a bit differently because he had started to realize that this is wearing on his conscience. He's killing people. He don't know if he's killing the right people. He's just dissatisfied with it, and he tries to get out of it, but they won't let him get out of it in the way that he wants to get out of it. So he just gives it up, and he says, okay, I'm going to go do something else. And his father owned a bar, and just at the time he was getting ready to give it up, his father gets killed in a holdup. So he takes over the bar,
mm-hmm.
and now this ex-CIA hitman is back in Harlem running this bar that his father left him, and people start to come to him with problems. And so he decides, maybe I can help some of these people. Maybe I can atone for some of the bad things I did as a hitman. So he becomes a private detective, and that's kind of where it all kind of starts. But I think that's very interesting because in light of what's going on in the U.S. right now with Black Lives Matter, and that this detective series becomes very appropriate, apropos for what's taking place in America. And basically, Devil Barnett evolved. And I think right now what America is doing is evolving. And my latest book, number seven in the series, is called 6 to 1, and that'll be out later this month. And it actually talks about the corruption and the political goings on that creates this kind of negative atmosphere that's happening in the States right now. And Devil Barnett gets involved in some situations that rectifies some of that. So I think 6 to 1 will be a very interesting book in light of what's going on right now in the States.
Well, I was going to ask you that. When you're writing a fiction book, does reality actually ever step into this fictional writing? And clearly it does.
Yes, all the time for me, because I am a person who I have a point of view, and not that I'm trying to push my point of view on people, but mm-hmm. it is my point of view.
Yep.
So you often can have a character with your point of view,
mm-hmm.
or you can often have a character that espouses a point of view that you don't like as well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the beauty of writing, because you can create all of these things and then put them into the mouths and lives of other people, and have them connected and doing things, and that all takes place in your imagination. But then again, everything that happens in life takes place in somebody's imagination before it happens.
There's certainly no shortage of inspirational sources, is there?
Yes, I mean, even if you look at science, people say, okay, well, this is a scientific thing. Well, before it became a scientific reality, it had to exist as a thought in someone's mind. In the same way that writing exists in the mind before it reaches the page. So it's the same kind of thing.
I'm just sitting here and I think to myself, you're just so inspirational. You're focusing on the real life world and what's going on around you, and essentially transposing that into your fictional works. If you're looking for inspiration, you're not finding it in the environment, who do you look to? Are there any other writers or actors, or where do you look elsewhere for inspiration?
Well, I read a lot. I still read Agatha Christie. I read Ed McBain. I read James Burke. Or one of my favorites, Walter Mosley, Chester Himes. I'm reading people all the time, mm-hmm. and I'm discovering new guys all the time. And that's just what I love to read. I've always loved to read. And even now that I write a lot, I still read a lot. Mm-hmm. I probably read a couple books a week still. My wife is always complaining. She says, "You're always reading that detective stuff." I said, "But that's what I like. That's what I like to read.
That's Leave what I alone. Like. Leave me alone."
Yeah, I like. I mean, I do read other books as well, but mm-hmm. but she tends to like other kind of books.
Yeah,
and I like. I like jazz music, so I decided that okay, I'm going to make Devil Barnett have a jazz club. I'm just doing the things I enjoy doing. That's all.
Absolutely. That's life's journey. That's the ultimate in life's journey, having that control. I wonder, when you watch movies, do you have a particular movie that you enjoy watching over and over and over? I know I do.
Oh, yes. One of my favorite movies is Hud with Paul Newman. I think it was 1964 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember what struck me about this movie was, here was this guy who had no moral fiber, basically, and the father who had a lot of moral fiber. And it was basically the son against the father, two generations. And it was such a strong story for me because I read an interview about the guy who wrote it, Horton Foote, and he said, "Look, this is my specialty is writing about human relations." He says, "Because when you boil it all down, no matter what story you tell, it's about humans relating to each other." And I had to think about that. I said, "Wow, what a powerful statement."
Yeah.
And for that reason, I tend to look at books, plays, and I'm always looking for the human reaction, the human relations, how we're affecting each other human. How can one person have an idea or say something that's affecting other people, how they're reacting to it? And to me, that's what the height of drama content is, dramatic content is, mm-hmm. how we're affecting each other, how we're reacting to each other, how we're making each other feel. What are we doing when someone does something to us and makes us uncomfortable? That's dramatic conflict for me. And I try to stay focused on that. And I think that's what makes my books successful.
Absolutely. Very powerful. The human interaction, the nature of relationships, the nature of conflict and the likes. Now, in terms of your book series, your detective series, when people want to get their hands on your books, your work, where are they going to go?
Amazon. I try to keep it simple.
Keep it simple, absolutely. Now, I've looked at your website, and for anybody who is on the call with us today, I will be making that link to Teddy at teddyhaysproductions.com. Is that right, Teddy?
Yes, teddyhaysproductions.com.
And if you go to Teddy's website, you will see a long list of content, different videos, all the links to the books, back to Amazon. And again, below this video, you will find the links back to Teddy. Teddy, thank you so very much for lifting the lid on your life, sharing your journey through all of the wonderful things you've done on the My Future Business Show today.
Thank you so much, Rick, for having me. And I really appreciate being allowed on your show. And thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for joining us today. If you enjoyed the call, then make sure to subscribe, leave a comment, share us with your friends, and book your spot on the show at myfuturebusiness.com/interviews. And if you're looking for solutions that will help grow your business, then visit myfuturebusiness.com/shop.